Lee Steinberg joins us on Sports Byline, sports agent and attorney, and he has represented people like Troy Aikman, Steve Young, Warren Moon, also Ben Roethlisberger, and over 150 athletes. And at the height of his power as an agent, half of the starting NFL quarterbacks were his client. And, of course, you probably know the movie Jerry Maguire was modeled after Steinberg. And then it all fell apart, personally and professionally, family health problems, personal battles with addiction. Everything he had worked for over a quarter of a century in sports and representation was then gone. And Steinberg has battled back and again is in the game. He's written about the successes, failures, and challenges in his book called The Agent, My 40-Year Career Making Deals and Changing the Game. Lee, you know, I've known you for a long time, and one of the things I thought about was how hard was it for you to reflect back, think about what you had and what you had accomplished and lost, and then have to write about it in a book?
I've always stayed in the moment. There were 30 great years and about five or six not so great years. So my life really went in reverse, where I started with Steve Bartkowski as my first client. We do the biggest contract of all time. We've got 60 first-round draft picks I represented, and the very first pick in the first round eight times, half the starting quarterbacks, seven players in the Hall of Fame, and worked on sports movies, and Frank Jordan and I headed up Save the Giants. There were all sorts of fun things, and had role model clients. In the 2000s, a series of events happened in my personal life, where my father died a long, painful death of cancer. My two kids were diagnosed with a really heavy vision problem. The houses that we owned, two of them in Newport Beach, became infested with mold. We had to knock them to the ground. And then ultimately I got divorced, and I felt like powerless, like Gulliver on the beach, couldn't provide shelter for my family, couldn't stop my father from dying, couldn't prevent my kids from getting this awful situation, and then couldn't hold my marriage together. And I didn't start out heavily drinking. I was one beer Steinberg in college, and it took years until this developed. But once it did, especially in 2007, 8, and 9, biggest aspiration was to find more vodka. Now, I didn't come into the office drunk. I stayed home occasionally, and I finally got to March of 2010, and I had closed my office, given away my practice, closed my apartment, and I'm back at my parents' house in West L.A., and I had a moment of clarity that my dad had two core values. One was to treasure relationships, especially family, and the second was to make a meaningful difference in the world. So clearly I wasn't accomplishing either thing. So I put everything aside, went into sober living, and decided whatever it took, I would at least be sober for the rest of my life, and I'd be a good father. And that was 4 years ago, and we've just relaunched.
Let's go back. Let's go back to when it all started. I know about Steve Bartkowski, and you and I have talked about that before. But when you think, as you said, you live in the moment, when you're working in the moment, now that you've had a chance to reflect back on all that you accomplished, all that you built, all that you had, all that you lost, was there anything in that reflection that surprised you the most about your career, Lee?
I never internalized as we went along. There was a choice to make whether to memorialize life, to read articles, to do that, or to keep living life. And I always did the latter, and I bifurcated the public self from the private self. So the time went by so fast. And at the worst, I was able to have perspective. I'm not a starving peasant in Darfur. I'm not a person with the last name Steinberg in Nazi Germany, and I don't have cancer or crippling disease. So what excuse do I have not to come back into life and do what I've always done, which is try to make a difference?
You know, when you got into the business of representing athletes, you know, you were very young, probably a lot naive, and of course, representing athletes was still a very young business at the time. And in your book, which is a fascinating read called The Agent, My 40-Year Career, Making Deals and Changing the Game, you talk about some pretty slimy things that happens in your profession. You describe what some agents do to land clients, including paying players. You learn that IMG had an enemies list of agents that you were at the top of. You discovered a rival agency paid a writer $75,000 to write the very negative piece about you in a national publication. This does not indicate to somebody that knows you as long as I have that you'd want to be in that type of profession. Tell me a little bit about how you saw your profession of representing athletes.
One of the problems, Ron, was there's no collegiality, so that agents spend all their time trashing each other. I thought I'd be surrounded by colleagues, but and for many years I was at the top of popularity among agents. I was the president of ARPA, which was an association group, until I started signing the first player in the draft year after year after year. And at that point, it got brutal. Actually, our business today is cleaner than it was then because you have state regulations that are tough. Campuses have compliance, and you have to be certified by players' associations. And there's a whole bunch of standards and hoops to jump through. But back then, it was the Wild Wild West, and anything went. So recruiting has always been a tale of two cities. Kids that have good family backgrounds or parents involved in the process do selection panels, they do due diligence, and those people end up selecting good agents, good financial planners. But the people who have no one, it's the genesis of all the later problems. They don't learn how to budget, they don't learn a good financial plan, they don't have really adequate representation. So it's not what they deserve, but it's sort of what they're ready for.
Lee, one of the things I thought about is they go out and they recruit high school athletes and they try to say, you know, you're a student athlete and we have this great academic program at this school and that school. But in most cases, it really comes down to, as one coach told me, I was asked by a kid, how many times are you on TV, coach? And in your world, I mean, we're talking about money here and you've got a lot of influences on kids that are, you know, coming out of college at 20, 21 years old, and they're, you know, they know that there's big money out there. They've got family that are whispering in their ear. They come from maybe a tough socioeconomic situation. How do you sort through that when every agent is saying, well, I'll give you this, I'll give you that, you can make this much money? The posse around some of these people are whispering in their ear as well.
By profiling, by setting up a concept that athletes can be role models, asking them to go back to their high school community and set up a high school scholarship fund, which we have 120 of, or a repayment to the college campus, which Troy Aikman, Eric Karras at UCLA, or Edgerrin James at Miami, or Steve Young. And then at the professional level, to set up a foundation, find something to tackle, which has the leading business people, community leaders, and political leaders on a board. So years ago, it was Rolf Benerska, Kicks for Critters, in a plan that helped endangered species at the San Diego Zoo. But currently you have Warwick Dunn, who just did his 131st home to move single mothers by making the down payment into the first homes they'll ever own. If you have athletes who have some conscience and who are ambitious, care about second career, those are the types of people who end up very smoothly coming out of football. So Steve Young has a media career. He's already sold an internet company and is part of a hedge fund with Brent Jones. And three of the players I worked with, Warwick Dunn, Ray Childress, are actually, and Daron Cherry, are minority owners of teams. Bruce Smith owns a construction company and is owns part of a Mandalay Bay Hotel. So this is there's another model. The biggest fans of football are middle-aged businessmen. Matter of fact, our business rests on the irrationality of middle-aged businessmen. So all an athlete has to do is tap into that community. Like if you're on the 49ers, well, guess what? Silicon Valley is right there and the largest venture capital anywhere, and they're all sports fans.
Lee Steinberg is with us. We're talking about his book. I hope you'll check it out. It's an excellent book. It's called The Agent, The 40-Year Career Making Deals and Changing the Game. We're going to make it a selection of the month on Sports Byline as we continue across the country and around the world on America's Sports Talk Show.